afterwards at the 2017 World Credit Union Conference in beautiful Vienna, by the way. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing well, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. Appreciate it. Hey, we were talking before the recording, G20 stuff. I mean, this is like headline stuff. So give me what's the latest here? Because I love when like world stuff comes into credit union land, you know?
Yeah.
So
what's
going on?
G20, you know, it includes a lot of countries with big credit union systems. Yep. The United States, Canada, Australia, South Korea, a bunch of other countries. Mm-hmm. And they set the agenda for the international standard-setting bodies like the Basel Committee, the International Accounting Standards mm-hmm. Board, the Financial Action Task Force, the Financial Stability Board. And so they just had their leaders' summit in Hamburg, Germany on July 7th and 8th, just mm-hmm. like a couple of weeks ago. And so what's come out of that is the new statement of what the agenda is supposed to be at the international level, and I'm happy to say that it's a deregulatory agenda. One of the things they said was that Basel III, the capital rules, should be finalized without further increasing capital requirements. So compared to, say, 5 years ago where they said, look, you really have to have more capital, you have to have stricter accounting, it's completely different on that level now. I mean, there's been a lot of regulatory burdens added. Mm-hmm. But actually, the latest proposals to come out of the Basel Committee have been consistent with that statement. Mm-hmm. So one thing that just came out was trying to have an even more simplified approach to market risk, like interest rate risk mm-hmm. and foreign exchange risk mm-hmm. for community-based financial institutions. Another thing that's happened in the past few months is that for expected credit loss standards like CECL, the current expected mm-hmm. credit losses under U.S. GAAP, the Basel Committee said that national level regulators can allow institutions to add back the additional reserves caused by CECL to their capital. And so we filed a comment letter with NCUA in response to their supplemental capital and advance notice of proposed rulemaking, urging them to adopt that. Okay. And so hopefully that will happen, at least for the supplemental capital, mm-hmm. risk-based capital part of it. There's some limits in terms of how the Federal Credit Union Act is written in terms of the net worth ratio, but maybe they'll figure out a way to have it in that too. Yeah. So that's going to save credit unions billions of dollars, basically, if it's taken up.
Good news.
Anywhere in the world, but you know, you got to then convince the national level people to do it. So, you know, they're supposed to be consistent with the international guidelines, essentially, but you know, you got to take it the next mile, essentially.
Yeah. Well, when you save that amount of money, I mean, you can now reallocate those funds to other places, you know,
exactly.
like fighting cyber, I mean, cybersecurity, new technology, all that type of stuff. So it's great.
It'll probably keep a bunch of credit unions out of prompt corrective action. So, I mean, that's really good. And we're really happy to have that. And actually, they're allowing 5 years. So originally, they proposed 3 years for that, to add it back for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So we actually met with the Basel Committee in January in Basel, Switzerland, mm-hmm. and said, look, we'd really like to take it out to 5 years. And they were like, well,
why 5 years?
Well, you know, it's that'll smooth it out over a longer period of time. And actually, for like NCUA's regs on you know, basically subordinated debt as alternative capital, you know, that low income credit unions can use, it's a 5 year thing. Mm-hmm. So we said, be consistent with that. And actually, some of the banking authorities in Europe want to take it out to 10 years now, which would be cool. But the thing is, they've got a plan for a longer-term approach to basically make it so that even having CECL should not increase the capital requirements, mm-hmm. At least in theory. So they haven't come out with their final thing. You know, that's like the five-year thing is a transitional. Mm-hmm. But in the end, they're going to come out with some other standard to smooth it out permanently. So they did kind of an advance notice of proposed rulemaking on that we commented on earlier this year, and they're going to come out with a more detailed proposal. But it's looking a lot better than it was. I mean, you know, you have periods where you have increasing regulation, and now we're in a period of decreasing regulation. Yeah. And, you know, partially that's because they've done almost everything that they plan to do with the post-financial crisis reforms. It took a long time. But there are other things that go into it. You know, basically the politics in G20 countries like the U.S. or Great Britain or the United Kingdom, France, those sorts of countries is what drives the agenda. Canada, Australia, all the G20 countries. So you have things like the election of Donald Trump. Well, whatever you think of Mr. Trump, it slowed down things or changed the direction at the international level. That's one of the first things that happened.
Right.
And actually, Daniel Tarullo, who was one of the members of the Federal Reserve Board, he was the kind of regulatory, international regulatory czar for the United States. Mm-hmm. And he was very influential at the Basel Committee and driving a lot of this, tightening the rules. Mm-hmm. And he resigned in April, even though he had 5 years left on his appointment on the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. Yeah. So that,
because
you know,
of what's transpiring? Or?
I guess he didn't think that...
A little bit of a conflict there?
Yeah, I think if Hillary Clinton had won, he probably would have stayed. But, you know, he didn't want to be the messenger carrying a deregulatory agenda, I guess. So he decided to do something else, and which, of course, you know, you can understand and respect.
Sure.
But that's really going to help. Well, not so much his resignation, but just having a deregulatory agenda is going to help everybody.
Yeah.
And it's not just the U.S. You know, the Brexit vote in the United Kingdom last year rattled the international system. And, you know, oh, yeah. And the international system wants to maintain its legitimacy and everything. So they are now being more responsive because of things like Brexit and Donald Trump. Although it was really shaken until the French elections, believe it or not, with Emmanuel Macron winning those elections. He was the pro-European candidate. So you had Royal from the National Front who wanted to leave the European Union. Macron was pro-European Union. And but he's also pro-business. So what he wants is to support the EU, but have the rules be looser for business in order to, you know, have a better economy.
Makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
And so now that's, you know, in Europe, that's a big part of it. Basically, if France and Germany want to do something like deregulate, it's going to happen. So anyway, it's a good time to be involved in government relations, actually.
When you said upheaval, man, you meant upheaval.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing. You know, I started working for World Council in at the beginning of 2012.
Yeah.
And so it was still the post-crisis rulemaking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, before that, I worked for CUNA. So I started working for CUNA in 2005. So I saw the whole cycle.
You're well-versed.
Yeah. Well, we started out, you know, it was like the economy's good, kind of a deregulatory George W. Bush thing, although they didn't necessarily love credit unions. And then all of a sudden, wham, you get hit by this stuff that big banks did. Credit unions had nothing to do with it. We were collateral damage. But, you know, you have the your regulator sitting on these committees with all the bank regulators, and they say, well, you know, we got to do this. And, you know, often the rules ended up being tighter for credit unions.
Yeah.
Like, you know, with the NCUA stress test rules, you know, like if you're a bank in the United States, you have to be $50 billion in assets to have to do the stress test.
What's the credit union?
$10
billion. Oh.
And the justification for that was, well, we've only got one credit union that's more than $50
billion.
So, you know, we can't just do it to one.
Oh, so we're gonna lower it. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And so it's, you know, you talk about collateral damage. So, you know, now working at the international level, what we're trying to do is stop the regulatory burdens before they even come to the United States or other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, when we're successful, it means nothing happens. Nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if nothing has happened to you in the United States, you can thank World Council.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. And actually,
a collective thank you.
Well, and well, one of the things is that the, you know, a lot of these things are supposed to apply to internationally active institutions, and pretty much no credit unions in the United States qualify for that. I mean, you've got United Nations Federal Credit Union. It has some representative offices in places like Vienna. Actually, next door at the Vienna International Center, they have a representative office.
Okay.
But it's not a full-service branch.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a full-service branch, then it would be internationally active.
Well, what about, like, military Ukrainians?
Well,
like, Keesler in Mississippi,
right.
They are...
So there, if it's not considered international because the military base is considered under U.S. jurisdiction.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so the only credit union that in North America, or credit union system in North America, that's internationally active within the Basel Committee rules is the Desjardins Group in Quebec, because they own a bank in Florida. So then they are internationally active, but they own that bank for retirees, you know, basically who moved
Florida.
To Florida from, right, well, it's a little bit warmer there.
A little bit
warmer than Quebec. So, you know, we say, listen, can you put internationally active in this standard? You know, just stated expressly.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically in the U.S., what ends up happening is that you have, different, meetings of the different regulators, right? So you have FFIEC, the Federal Financial Institutions Examination Committee. So NCUA is on that. And basically they go along with what is happening for community banks more and more. I mean, that's just, they want to be consistent with that. So, if it says internationally active banks, agencies like FDIC or the controller of the currency basically say, okay, this doesn't apply to community banks. And then NCUA says, well, we only have community institutions, so we don't have to get in it. And so a couple years ago, the Basel Committee's external audit rules, we said, look, put internationally active in that. And I have a slide where basically it's a controller of the currency issuance that says community banks are exempt. This only applies to internationally active. And I was like, well, let's see, was there an NCUA thing? Well, NCUA didn't issue anything because everybody's community-based within that framework. So it's like, well, guys, nothing happened. So, but it could have. You could have had to do these actually really tight audit rules that are designed for banks that are $200 billion plus, in assets. And then the interest rate risk rules the Basel Committee issued last year, same thing. So I guess you could apply it to credit unions in the U.S. if you really wanted to, but there's no requirement at the international level to do that. You're not going to be held to be out of compliance with the international guidelines or whatever, because they do these analyses every few years. Yeah. They go through and say, well, you did this, you didn't do that, and we're very mad at you. And, if you're the United States, you can kind of say, well, sorry. If you're a smaller jurisdiction like Canada, they say, oh, well, we better fix that because they don't have as big an army, I guess, is what it comes down to. Plus, in Canada, it's actually an even more concentrated banking system. So you have these big Canadian banks like TD, TD Bank, yeah, and a bunch of other ones, RBC. And they're internationally, really internationally active. They've run out of room to grow in Canada, so that's why, TD bought Commerce Bank in the U.S. And so, right, exactly. Scotiabank is really big in the Caribbean and other places. And the Canadian federal government really wants its banks to have access to these markets, so they're very, very focused on trying to follow all of the international standards for that reason. And then the credit unions kind of get their collateral damage there too.
Well, they can't say banker banking anymore. What's up with that? But I know I've heard the.
I think that may change very soon.
I heard that
they have to change the law. Yeah. But that's one of the things.
I'm just funning.
Right, but actually, with Canada, they can, if the government wants to do something, they get it done, because the prime minister's, except if you have like a hung parliament or something, the prime minister's party has a majority. So if you go talk to the finance minister of Canada and they say, we're going to do something, it'll probably happen. It's not quite like
good.
In the U.S. where, you have the secretary of the treasury and other things, and they're appointed by the president, and then you have Congress. Mm-hmm. It's like the ministers are actually in Congress. Mm-hmm. So it cuts both ways. Yeah. So in this situation, it's like, well, if they say they're going to do it, it'll probably happen. But on the other hand, when they wanted to raise taxes on credit unions, well, they already had the majority to do that. It wasn't like in the U.S. where you can slow things down. So some things like reporting on non-resident alien accounts in Canada, they have to follow this international standard called the Common Reporting Standard that's going to start later this year, maybe next year in some places. We've worked with CUNA the past 4 years to block that from being put into U.S. law, and we've been successful. Now there's interest income reporting for non-resident aliens, but at the international level, they want to know account balances at the end of the year, all this stuff. Even if it's like some country that, they're like Venezuela. People want to put money like in the United States so that they don't have it like expropriated by the government. But we have a tax treaty. The United States has a tax treaty with Venezuela. So Venezuela's, give us the data.
Oh, I see.
Give us the data so we know where it is. So that resonated with Congress, plus the regulatory burdens associated with that. And, the thing is, if you're a non-resident alien in the United States, you don't pay taxes in the U.S. So there's no impact at all on taxation. So this is another thing that could have happened, but hasn't, is probably not going to happen since it's been blocked three times in Congress where they tried to like put a bill in or an amendment in the middle of the night. And CUNA's monitoring this and just says, no, no, and then get it taken out because there really isn't that much support for it. But, you know, there's a constituency that wants to follow all these standards. But it's, I mean, even the U.S. Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, FATCA, that you might or might not have heard of, that was not really supposed to apply to credit unions in the U.S., but they have some compliance responsibilities, unfortunately. We've been able to block some of them from actually going into effect. That was passed in the middle of the night. Nobody thought it would have, they thought it would only apply to foreign banks. I mean, that's what it said. And then the IRS said, well, it actually applies to all withholding agents. Well, you know who's a withholding agent? Anybody who's got money that's taxable, including a credit union. So we even called up the IRS and they said, oh, no, that's not right. And I was like, actually, look at the law here. Withholding agents, that's us. So on that end, you know, we like spoke in an IRS hearing in Washington and stuff. And we actually got a lot of the credit unions around the world exempted from that.
Oh, cool.
But hopefully that whole law will go away if they do tax reform. Yeah. Fingers crossed. We'll see.
Michael, you don't have a full plate. You have a full buffet. That was more than I bargained for. So thank you for that.
Well,
and
great.
People are going to love this. This is kind of like a one-stop report. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome. And thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Michael Edwards, if you want the latest on regulations and governments around the world, this is the guy to talk to. Thank you so much.
You.
Well done.